This would also achieve a goal that Lincoln had urged for more than 2 years, each of his successive commanders, with Hooker and with Burnside and with George Gordon Meade, never mind with McClellan early on. Lincoln had urged them and urged them to please use all of your men to inflict the greatest damage possible on Lee and his army. Grant would do that as well. And finally, if all else went well, went according to form, he almost certainly would capture Richmond, the most famous, the most important city in the Confederacy. Now, he didn't want to get to Richmond without fighting. There's a great contrast between Grant and McClellan here. And you often read critiques of Grant that look at all the casualties he was going to suffer in May and early June 1864 and say, look at this. Grant piled up these huge mounds of bodies to get to a point where George B. McClellan got back in 1862 with virtually no bloodshed. Well, Grant doesn't want to replicate what McClellan did. He wants to hurt Lee as he gets closer to Richmond, not to get to Richmond with as few casualties as possible. He wants to hurt Lee's army because he believed, in one sense, that if he didn't fight Lee in significant battles on the way to Richmond, Lee's army would be big enough so that Lee could defend the city of Richmond with only part of it and detach strength to go west. Grant expected that decisive action might take place on Sherman's front. Lincoln and Halleck joined him in that. Sherman might be able to accomplish wonderful things out in the West. They all hoped that he would. But Grant also knew, as the passage in his memoirs that I quoted from in an earlier lecture demonstrates, Grant knew that the Virginia front would be the most important for most people in the North, as well as for most observers watching this action from elsewhere. Well, what could Lee do here? He could do no more, really, than try to parry Grant's thrusts and hold off the Federals long enough to exhaust the Northern will to continue a struggle that was becoming increasingly expensive in terms of blood and treasure. Now, Lee would always be looking for openings, for counterstrokes. That is the nature of his leadership, always hoping to be able to seize the tactical advantage or perhaps even the strategic advantage on occasion. But realistically, he was facing an army so much larger than his that those options were going to be very rigorously restricted. He was coming off an extremely hard winter, Lee was. As in the winter of 1862-63, he had had to disperse much of his army so that the men and animals would have adequate food and fodder. The Confederate soldiers in Lee's army had been on a ration in the winter of 1864 and on into the spring of 1864 that amounted to 4 ounces of meat a day. That's one Big Mac patty, and that's the pre-cooked weight, and a pint of cornmeal. That is just barely enough food to keep someone's body together. It was a very hard winter for the Confederacy, and one in which Lee was forced to write to the War Department and to President Davis saying that if this situation doesn't improve, I'm not sure I can keep my army together. So it's not an army of Northern Virginia that's been well fed. It's an army that does, however, remain very confident in Lee's leadership. The armies were arrayed opposite each other in the same section of Virginia they had come to know so well over the preceding 2 years, along the Rapidan-Rappahannock River line. That's the frontier between these two big armies in Virginia. Lee had not only to protect that frontier, but also to keep one eye on his supply routes to the fertile Shenandoah Valley, the Virginia Central Railroad, making its way out of eastern Virginia over towards Staunton and other points to the west. Meade's Army of the Potomac, again, technically under Meade's command, it's Meade's army to the end of the war, but considered Grant's by most people. Meade's army was broken into three pieces. There had been 7 corps in the Army of the Potomac at Gettysburg, but it had been reorganized. Now there are just 3. Winfield Scott Hancock commanded the 2nd Corps. Gouverneur Kemble Warren commanded the 5th Corps. And John Sedgwick commanded the 6th Corps. Now also attached to the Army of the Potomac was Ambrose E. Burnside's 9th Corps. Here comes Burnside into the picture in the east again. We last saw him in Knoxville. Well, his 9th Corps, a very large corps, joins the army to reinforce it, but he can't take orders from Meade because he outranks Meade. He was a major general before Meade was a major general. So you have this odd command relationship on the northern side,